Hi, good morning, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and it is my pleasure on behalf of University College of Syracuse University to welcome you all to this morning's program. We'll be talking about the Onondaga County Water Authority. I want to remind you, if you've seen this month's schedule, you know that we have four more sessions after today, and that's the end of our season until September. Of course, we are broadcast on WCNY-FM. I also want to remind you of that on Sundays, and they have all of the four weeks in March up on their website right now if you wanted to go back and capture any of those programs. But the next few weeks are going to be very interesting, and I think a lot of topics that you'll want to check out ahead of time. Next week, it was a little bit of a change in the schedule. I had originally said next week was going to be consolidation, but next week is going to be health care reform. Although the legislation has passed, you know that there's a lot of change going on. Actually, I just read an interesting article yesterday, or there are several interesting articles out there, obviously, but even looking back historically, that it's not over yet. If you look back at what happened with Medicare, Medicaid, all of that, there are always changes. So we'll want to hear about what's going on there, and then looking ahead to the future weeks with Mayor Stephanie Miner. Then we'll be talking about hydrofracking, and then we'll get to one of our favorite topics, government consolidation. And we will also note that this is our 45th year. I'll have to count up how many sessions we have had, something over 1,500. But that's quite an accomplishment, I think, for a community program that's been running that long. And, of course, it's due to you who show up or listen week after week. So I want to thank you for that. But right now, I would like to introduce Ann Messenger of Messenger Associates, a TMR member, who will introduce today's guest speaker. Thank you, Ann.
Okay. Good morning. How many of you woke up this morning and went somewhere in your house to a tap and took a drink of water? A tap, yeah. When I knew I'd be introducing Mike this morning, I was thrilled. Mike knows this because I've told him many times. He is one of my proudest public service accomplishments. In the early 90s, Bill Sanford, then chair of the county legislature, called and said, "Ann, what do you know about water?" And that began a six-year journey for me as a board member of the Onondaga County Water Authority, or AQUA. I learned lots. When I first walked in, I walked into my first meeting of the five-member board as the token woman. My place was marked by a pink folder. That's the first time I've ever told that story publicly. Might as well be a TMR, right? And I learned much more than I did about board dynamics. I learned about water. I came to view water as Central New York's most important asset for personal purposes, for quality of life, and for economic development. A year or two into my board tenure, we had the need for a new executive director, and I chaired the search. We posted the position nationally. Then board members and senior staff and I went off to Texas for an annual, I think it was Texas, wasn't it? For an annual water conference. And we were on high alert for promising candidates. I sat in on a very big session on TQM. Remember that? Total Quality Management. And I asked a question. You had to stand up at a microphone. I asked my question, introduced myself as coming from Syracuse and Onondaga County. Afterward, Mike came up, introduced himself, remember that? Had a cup of coffee the next day, and the rest is history. We had landed ourselves someone with a Bachelor's of Science degree in Management Science, an MBA in Operations Management, who had been involved in the water industry in both public and private sectors since 1977, with significant operating experience in both treatment and distribution of potable water systems and sewage collection systems. Within a year of Mike's coming on board in 1993, Aqua had changed dramatically. The board was talking about a 20-year capital plan, which had been unheard of until then. We had integrated work teams, a new MIS system, a full-blown training curriculum, a training room even. We had, in fairly short order, a full-blown performance management system in place. We had a new logo, a new brand. Board agenda items were more strategic than tactical. Mike was taking care of operations. I'm proud to say that since then, Mike has represented Onondaga County well as he has moved into major leadership positions in the water industry. He's moved on from being chair of the New York State American Water Works Association. He has moved into the National American Water Works Association as a board member, a member of its executive committee. He sits on a major water research foundation, and on and on and on. Many of my Facebook friends in the room know that I've had a chance to travel a lot in the last two-ish years. In some of the countries I've been to, China, Turkey, Bangladesh, India, there was no putting a glass under a tap to get a drink of water. There was no ice in drinks. We couldn't eat fresh vegetables. You couldn't even stand in the shower with your mouth open. Why? Because of poor water quality. I treasure our water here, and I am delighted to introduce to you the man who brings it to us so well, Mike Hooker.
Good morning. This is a little different for me, so I'm going to wander around with a microphone and try to run my own slideshow. We'll skip through here. A lot of people want to know what Aqua is. Aqua is a public benefit corporation. It was created by New York State legislation. The legislation was passed in 1951, but it wasn't until 1955. Aqua and I are the same age. I'm 6 months older than Aqua. But there was a New York Water Supply Corporation. It was a private company, and they had not really done anything for the community in a long, long time. So it took about 4 years, and then Aqua got the funding together, and they purchased the assets of the New York Water Supply Corporation back in 1955. At that time, we had about 8,000 customers, and we had about 134 miles of main. I'm just giving you a base point reference there because we'll go into it a little further. Interestingly enough, one of the cornerstones of the system at the time was the DeWitt water system, which eventually Aqua sold to the town of DeWitt, and we'd like to get it back eventually. Consolidated back, but the authority didn't really have a lot of money at the time when they were getting started, and they were trying to do some improvements around the system. So we do not collect taxes. We do not pay taxes. One of the things that the board, when Ann brought me on board, was they wanted us to run like a private system. My background came out of the private system. I worked for both American Water Works Service Company, which is the largest investor-owned water system in the United States, and then also Consumers Water Company, which is like the second or third largest one. So I had that private background, and they wanted to run our water system like a private company with the benefit of not having to pay the taxes. And if you look at typical utility, when you add into their franchise taxes and their property taxes and their state income taxes, federal income taxes, about 40% of their bill is taxes. We don't have that issue. So what we try to do is run like a private system. And typically what I try to do is benchmark against what the National Association of Water Companies, which is all the private guys, I try to see how we do stack up against them. But peeling away the tax portion of it, both on the revenue side and on the expense side. We now distribute water to 91,637 customers. When Ann came on the board, it was about 56,000 customers. And we're now in four counties, so that's why we kind of go by Aqua, and we call ourselves Central New York Water System. We have 20,000 customers outside Onondaga County. And I point that out because if you're in the county and you're in one of the zones of assessment for the county, you pay, there's a tax on your tax bill for the Onondaga County Water District. We paid for the major facilities that we needed that back in the 60s that Aqua couldn't afford to build, and the county built those things. And there were some very forward-thinking people in the 1960s that built the Metropolitan Water Board system. They put that system together, and the people that we sell outside the county, those 20,000 people, they actually pay an equivalent value the same as what you're doing. So let's just take an easy number, $100,000. If they divide it, actually probably $1 million would be better. It's about $10 a account. The people outside the county are paying the same thing, so the amount that you're paying in the county is actually lower by those 20,000 accounts that are outside, because they're paying a share just like you are. And when we take on a system outside the county, they pay for all their improvements before they come on, before we'll take them on. They build their mains, they build their pump station, their tank, and so it's not being built at the existing customer's expense. It's built on as a water district's expense, and then they contribute towards the Onondaga County Water District. We make sure that all the information about those properties gets to the Metropolitan Water Board so they can bill them properly, which ultimately lowers your tax bill in the county as well. It's kind of an overview of our system. Up here, this is Oswego. Why we serve in Oswego is the town of outside the county where Metropolitan Water Board facilities are, if they don't serve water, they were paying taxes. And back in the 1990s, the Metropolitan Water Board worked out a deal with the towns that are in Oswego County where the facilities run, because the Metropolitan Water Board plant is in the town of Oswego. The intake is there, and then they have mains running up through Oswego, Minetto, and Scruple, and coming into Onondaga County, which their terminal reservoir is up by in Clay, across the street from the Great Northern Mall. They were paying taxes on all those facilities, and they worked out a deal where they would provide them water, and in turn, they got tax exempted, so eventually that phased out. We got involved in the project because the money that the Metropolitan Water Board put on the table, the town engineer said they couldn't do the project. We got involved with the project. We actually did the entire project with the budget was allotted, and we never spent any of Aqua money on the project. And essentially, like the town of Oswego, we built them a tank, and then it was paid for with their funding, but we built the tank, and we put about 190,000 feet of main in the town. So basically, they have water in every street there, and that was all funded by Metropolitan Water Board, and then essentially then Metro got the tax exemption for the town. Critical because it's the intake there and the water plant there. It's most of their investment is actually in the town of Oswego. So it worked out really well. We did the project and brought it in. And then eventually what happened was apparently they liked what we did, so they had existing customers that were being fed off the city of Oswego, and we wound up taking those customers over and actually turning the meter around so we could push water back to the city of Oswego in an emergency or whatever. But so we took over all the existing customers up along Lake Ontario. It doesn't show it on here, but we actually, last year, late 2008, the towns of Marcellus, Spafford, and Atisco got together, and they built a water system, and we actually now serve customers on both the east and western sides of Atisco Lake for the first time. And we actually have customers in the town of Skaneateles, which nobody ever thought that would happen. And that actually came from a lime ledge job that was just actually put online at the end of this year, or last year, excuse me. And then we go all, I'm just trying to give you some frame of reference. It goes all the way out to Constantia. We're up into McConnellsville. We have 14 customers in Annsville. They happen to be on the old McConnellsville system. What was driving this, a lot of these consolidations, was they had groundwater supplies, they had hardness in their water, or they had groundwater systems that were considered to be under the influence of surface water. They were going to either have to provide treatment or find an alternative source. And what they did was they found the alternative source for us. And it was important for us to get these kind of customers, because I came to Aqua in October of 1993 on the heels of our first rate increase in 8 years. And Miller announced they were leaving, and they were our largest customer. We were selling more than 10% of our water, and we just lost a huge amount of revenue. So what we were doing was, one way to do it was to try to convert wholesale customers to retail, or find new systems to add on to the system. And you'll see some of those as we go along. That's just hard to read. But that, actually, if you look, there's a consumer confidence report. It's a report down here by the placards here. You can see it a little bit better, but that shows you all the towns and villages that we serve and then where their source of supply is, because some of it's Atisco and some of it's Ontario. AQUA has a 5-member board. Ann was one of those 5 people that brought me here. They hire me to oversee the day-to-day operations. We currently employ 128 people. Give you a kind of a brief overview how it is. There's actually lines on there that you can barely see. I wasn't able to change the color on it. But we break down into functions. There's on the operating side, we have a deputy executive engineer. His name is Tony Geis. Tony was with O'Brien and Gear for 30 years, and 11 years ago, I was able to convince him to come work for the authority. And underneath him, he has an executive engineer. That's Jeff Miller. Jeff Miller was with Stearns and Wheeler for 20 years. I convinced him to come to work for us about 4 years ago. You see our legal counsel. Our legal counsel, a lot of you probably know him, is Terry Pickard. Terry is one of our best advocates, and he's become a good member of our team. And then I'd like to point out also my IT manager. We developed a GIS system and a base map for the county. We worked with finance. AQUA funded most of the project. It was about a $600,000-$700,000 project. The county put about $50,000 into it. The finance department was under order to digitize all their maps. We did the project. Our philosophy was is that if we saved any money, you know, we saved $50,000 by getting the county to participate, but we also saved the county taxpayers a lot of money because they had a bunch of different projects that were going on. So we developed the base map and we share it with the county. The county is the finance department is the repository for the base map, so they make changes. We get the changes for free, and then anybody that participates in it, a town or a district gets in there. They can get the map, but they also have to provide the information to the county so they have all these planning layers on it. My dream was eventually we'd get to the point where economic development would be like a one-stop shop where they could come in and visit and they could see all of the facilities. They could see water and sewer, transportation, rail, whatever, and they'd be able to have electric. They'd have everything all at one spot that where they wouldn't have to go traveling from entity to entity to try to find out if there's facilities available for a property or whatever. But we have an Intergraph system, and the guy that's running my IT department is a fellow that sold us the GIS system. And lately the joke is if I go to a meeting in New York and I'm sitting with somebody, the boss chases me away because they think I'm going to try to steal some more of their talent, which if I can and I get the opportunity, I will. This is our sources of supply. Again, you see Atisco, Lake Ontario, other. Other is about 3% of it's the city of Syracuse. We have some places where the city of Syracuse has their mains coming down from Skinny Atlas, and we do take off of there. We also operate on a contract basis a little system up in Manlius, the Sky Ridge system. It's a well system. So we do that on a time and materials type of basis for the town. And then we also, for Ally Chemical, we run 2 small systems down in Tully, Took Springs and Eastside Springs. So there's some of the other. Interesting note, 13.4 billion gallons sold. That's about 2 billion gallons a year lower than it was 20 years ago. So you can see some interesting dynamics here. We have 34,000 more customers, but we're selling 2 billion gallons less water. Part of that was the Miller plant, which was 4.5 million gallons a day. But there's some other things that are going on, too. When I first got here, you can see now industrial and wholesale are about the same, about 23%. It was skewed the other way. The biggest amount actually at one point was our wholesale. Why that's changed is it because we've taken over about 17 systems, and a lot of them were wholesale customers are now retail customers of the Water Authority. So our big number now is our residentials and then our commercial accounts. Our residential accounts, probably about 85, almost 86,000 accounts. That's actual households in the 4-county region. This is also down. In 1990, actually through about the end of the 1990s, we were selling maybe 41 to 42 million gallons of water a day, or producing it, selling at this range. We're down to 37 million gallons a day. There's a couple things that are going on. Anheuser-Busch. With the drought that was going on in the south, and one of their plants down in Georgia, they were either going to not be able to produce water, or produce beer, or had cut down on their use. The benchmark that was told to me back in the 90s was it was about 9 gallons of water for a barrel of for a gallon of beer. The ratio for Onondaga County Water Authority, what we sell to Anheuser-Busch now, is down to around 4.2 or 4.3. So you can see it's in half. We used to sell them 4.5 million gallons a day. They're down to about 2.2 or 2.3 million gallons a day. So there's a shrinking usage there. The other thing that we're seeing is that households are shrunk. I'm an example of it. My boys are out of the house now. I went from a four-person household to a two-person household, and I'm sure a lot of you went through the same thing. Another thing that took place is that about 3-4 years ago, EPA started this program called WaterSense. It's very similar to Energy Star, and there's been a big push to make water fixtures and appliances more efficient, and they're ratcheting those numbers down more and more. Again, I'm a good example there. For some reason, within 6 months of each other, my dishwasher and my washing machine decided to die, and the ones that I got are much more efficient. And I'm typical. I went from being about a 21,000-gallon quarter customer to down to about 14 or 15,000 gallons, and that's what we're seeing is average customer went from 20,000 gallons to about 14 or 15,000 gallons per quarter. So even though we've raised rates, they've cut down on their usage, and their bills are actually almost very comparable. Another thing that's taking place is the climate change. There's always a discussion about that. What's going on around a lot of the country is they're drying up. If you've seen pictures of Lake Mead and you see the white ring around it, that's about a 40 or 60-foot ring around there. I mean, there's talk in Las Vegas area that you know they might not be able to produce power from the Hoover Dam in another 10 years if it keeps dropping like that, and it's going to take a long time for the recharge. Where we're kind of at the other end of the spectrum, we're getting a lot of rain. You can see in the summertime, for the last 5 years, we've had a lot of rain. We used to see a 25% bump in demand in the summertime, where we don't see it anymore. Last year, there was very discernible difference, maybe 200 gallons a quarter or between the winter and summer usage. So there's no real demand change. Myself personally, you know, I was cutting my grass every 6 or 7 days, and I filled up my pool the beginning of summer, and essentially took water out of it. I never had to put water in it all summer. So if your pool is tight and it's not leaking, you probably are seeing the same types of things. And that's impacting revenue and impacting the demand. Customer account growth. Again, I showed you, I mentioned earlier, we started out here about 8,100 customers. We're now at just shy of 92,000. We do have a lot of camp meters. That number doesn't include the camp meters. We'll probably add 700 accounts to that over the summertime, so we'll be well over 92,000 for about half of the year. And then our water main growth, again, 134 miles. We're now up to 1,844 miles of water main. We have about 40 people that are responsible for taking care of it. We do have two people that do full-time leak detection. The reason why we do that, it's water's too precious to waste, so we proactively look for leaks. Last year, we had about 410 main breaks and 1,844 miles of main. That's about 0.2 breaks per mile. The national average is about 0.3, so we're a little bit below that. But one of the things I like to point out is that it was 0.22 for us, but about a third of those we found ourselves before they presented themselves, which a lot of utilities don't do. They may do a leak detection survey once in a while to hire somebody to come in for a week and do it. So we're proactively looking for it, and our number of 0.22 is with those in there. If you take that out, we're about half of the national average on leaks that just present themselves. Same thing with the fire hydrants. You know, very few back in the 1950s, and we now have almost 12,000 hydrants, 11,676. One of the things I like to also point out, too, is about employees per 1,000 connections. I look at the numbers two different ways, but you can see here it was about 3.75 in 1955, and we've brought it down. We had a little bump in the 1990s. One of the philosophies prior to Ann being on the board and the people that have come since then was that when we did take over a system, we took all their employees. We didn't do a business review of it. Since I've been at the authority and with the direction of the board, we review every acquisition, every consolidation as a business project, and we look for a payback. We've taken on about 17 systems, and over that time, we basically only took on 4 people from 3 different systems. Because, and what I did was, when I knew that this the consolidation was imminent, I held the position open. I didn't actually fill positions. One of the stats that Ann may not be aware of, but between 1993 and 1996, except for one person that we took on when we took on Sylvan Beach, I was the only person hired by the authority. So you look on our seniority chart from 93 to 96, I'm the only person on there. We didn't hire anybody. We did everything through attrition. It was too important. We didn't want to have a bunch of ticked off people messing with your water, so we did it all through attrition. Change it around here. This is customers per employee. It was down in the low, in the mid 200s. In 1990, it was around 439. Today, it's around 719. Interestingly enough, with the changes in people, we've done is we've invested heavily in automation. We've invested heavily in training our personnel. One of the first things I did was after I got settled in and got the budgets in place and everything, my first year, after about 6 months, I had an employee meeting to bring everybody together, because back in the early 1990s, when they were talking about total quality management, there was also a big push on the private side to try to take over as many public systems as possible, because they convinced everybody they were more efficient. And then basically, I called the meeting together and brought all the employees in and told them, look, we need to cross-train. We need to be more efficient with what we do. We need to be more focused on what we're doing, and that we had room for people that wanted to work, but we didn't have room for specialists or prima donnas. And if you work with me, we can make ourselves in a position where a private company can't take us over, because if we do it right, with them having to pay taxes and whatever, they could never afford to do what we do. Typically, a public water system will say, oh, we're 10% cheaper or whatever, when they should be 40 or 50% cheaper. And we strive for that 40 or 50% cheaper. Example, I like to, you know, my dad lives in New Jersey. His quarterly water bill is higher than his monthly water bill is higher than my quarterly water bill. He has a private system. I've seen a lot of systems. And then when I talk to, I have friends in the business are from California, and when they talk about their water bills, I'm shocked about it, because they're talking hundreds of dollars versus our $50 a quarter, and then they start telling me, well, that's monthly. So we have it pretty good. System growth and acquisition, it's actually been less than 1% for currently, because the economy has slowed down. We've never really gotten really, for new stuff, never really more than like 2% a year. Where most of our growth has come from was taking on systems that needed us. One of the first ones I got involved with, and actually was in the process, was this used to be a long list of wasted opportunities. That's the only thing we're talking about right now, is the old Northeast Biofuels plant in Volney. It's converting over to Sunoco ethanol plant. That's coming online. They should be up and running this year. Right now, there's not a lot of talk about new things coming on board. But it's been it's been interesting, and it's been changing quite a bit. Ann mentioned our capital improvement program. We had a large fund balance in the early 1990s, but we didn't have a plan. We had a supervisor would talk about his backlog of jobs. And one of the board members said, well, where's the backlog? And we went and looked at it, and it was like three jobs, and two of them were his. And we weren't flushing hydrants. We weren't operating valves. We weren't replacing services. We weren't replacing hydrants. We didn't have a main replacement program. Our facilities had been run down. We had numerous pump stations that needed work on it, both the mechanical equipment and the structures. We had tanks that are undersized. For those of you who've been around here long enough, you remember the twin tanks in both Liverpool, North Syracuse, Brewerton. 1995, it came to home to roost. Those six tanks had a combined capacity of about 1.3 million gallons, and they were probably about 10 or 15 feet too short. So we had, in heavy demand times, we had low pressure problems in all those areas. And then mid to late 90s, we took those tanks down. The three new tanks that are up are 3 million gallons, and they're also about 10 or 15 feet higher. And since then, we have not had issues with demands and pressure. So we've addressed those problems. We've done a lot of work in that regard. But we came up with a plan. We looked out 20 years. we sit down and we look, review everything that we, all of our needs. Then we have to place some reality to it. I have some people that really have some expensive tastes, and like last year's capital budget, and my departmental request was like $36 million. We had about $3.8 million for this year. So you can see we cut it quite down quite a bit. I make a recommendation and prioritize it. Then we go in front of the board, and the board will ask questions, and we'll make some additional changes to that, to eventually what the board wants to approve. We do have mains that are over 100 years old. We have tanks that are over 70 years old. That's not a bad thing if you take care of them, but you do need to take care of them. And there's some people think, well, you need to replace 1%, you know, because you're doing mains 100, you need to replace 1% of your mains every year. That's not necessarily true. You could have a 100-year-old main, because back 100 years ago, they way over-engineered it, so they're very thick walls, and if you've maintained it, they're in good shape. What you need to do is have records of what's going on with those mains and what's the history of those mains to make sure that it's actually something that needs to be replaced. So we've seen places where we've taken over a system where they have an acidic soil, and it's the main's been attacked from the outside, and it might be 20 or 25 years old, and it's leaking. So we've had to replace those, and we've got other areas where it's over 100 years old, and it's in perfectly fine shape, and the water quality is good. So you don't just take it out because it's old. You got to make a decision based on how the quality of it. How is the program funded? Essentially, from 1993 to 2001, we were doing everything through the fund balance and through our net income, because everything we make, we reinvest in the system. In 2001, we issued an $11.5 million water revenue bond. It was our first one since the 1980s. The one we issued in 1980s was for the water plant that we built for Atisco Lake Water. That was basically the $11.5 million, and then the subsequent one in 2005, those were for tank projects that we were doing and for some pump station rebuilding, for some facilities that needed to be replaced. Then in 2008, we started a plant project. Originally, we thought this project was going to be about $18 million. That's what the engineers were doing. We were fortunate in our economy. We got some very good bids. Tony Geis and Jeff Miller did some really good work on keeping the cost down. We put all of our projects in for the State Drinking Water Revolving Fund, a lot of times not figuring we'd get it. But what happened in 2008 was we were looking at working with the State Environmental Facilities Corporation. They had started this new program. It's called a guarantee program, where they were going to lend us the money at the state's AAA rate. We were into the program. And then about halfway through the process, they said there may be state revolving fund money ready, because people said they were ready to go aren't, but you guys are. We can get you into the state revolving fund. What that did gave us a one-third interest subsidy, which over the 20-year life of that $14 million bond saved our ratepayers about $2 million in interest. And we were able to turn that around very quickly in about a three-week period, change it from going their guarantee program to the state revolving fund, and ultimately our customers made out by the interest savings. Point out here our quarterly bill for we've had to raise rates annually since 2001. We originally had a plan in 2001 to go forward at about 2% a year for 5 years, and then 1% a year, and then that was in the beginning of the year, and then in September of 2001, we all know what happened. That changed the dynamics of a lot of different things for us. It put a lot of pressures on us in different ways, through retirement system, through our insurances. We worked very hard to lower our cost of insurance, and in 1 year's time, we saw actually all of it double because of what took place on September 11th. But even so, for a quarterly bill, 15,000 gallons, it's $56.68 per quarter. That's 63 cents a day. When you consider it's delivered to your tap, that's a pretty good deal for 63 cents a day, especially if you look around the rest of the country. 2009, through the Environmental Facilities Corporation, we arranged to borrow $33 million. The county asked us to take on the construction of the cover tanks to replace the eastern and western reservoirs for the Onondaga County Water District, which is overseen by the Metropolitan Water Board. We went into the project. We came in about July of 2008. The design was probably about 25% done. Tony Geis took that project on. He's built a number of these tanks, a little smaller than the 30 million gallon, 20 million gallon ones we were doing. But we took those projects on, and the engineers were telling us, like at the time, for just the two, $55 million. And when we talk about that, we're talking about design, construction, the cost of the issuance associated for the bonding and then the debt service reserve. All that's rolled in there. That's an all-inclusive number. The tanks themselves, they thought were going to be under $50 million. We got the design done by October. We went out, started going out for bids in November, so we had the Western Reservoir come in December of 2008, and then the Eastern Reservoir come in December of, January 2009. And we all know at the time the economy was in bad shape, and we were the benefactor of the fact that we were going out to do a major project when there wasn't a lot of work on the street. And what we saw was phenomenally good numbers. We went from $55 to $33 million, which was incredible. We'd like to take a lot of the credit for it. We'll take credit for the fact that we got the jobs out when we did, so timing's everything. But we were the benefactor of some very, very good bids, and so which ultimately is the ratepayers are going to benefit. And then again, when they came out with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the ERA, they said, you want to put the projects in? We said, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's put them in. It doesn't hurt to ask. The state had about $60 million for provided to them through the stimulus funds for water. It's interesting. The $875 billion bill for the stimulus, $32 billion was for infrastructure. $29 billion went to transportation and roads and whatnot. $2 billion went to wastewater, and $1 billion went into water systems. And then they divvied that up amongst the 50 states. And New York's share, based on their needs survey, got us around $60 million. And I understand there was like over 300 projects that were applied for this project. They ultimately funded 16. What happened was they had to be shovel-ready. They had to be ready to go. We were in the loop, and we found out in December that we were going to be the 16th project funded. And they called us a sponge project because what they were doing was there was about $3.1 million left in the fund, but as the projects ahead of us were coming in lower, the fund was growing, and we were going to get a grant up to 50% of the actual tank construction for the Western Reservoir. By the time we did the closing on our bond amendment agreement in March, this past March, it grew to $6,195,000. So that's a grant that's going to be going against us. So that $33 million bond, what we're actually going to ultimately pay for is around $27 million. So we saved the ratepayers some more money. We have a third tank that we have to build, and ultimately that's going to impact it. When we set out to do these projects, we were thinking we'd have to, between what was going on operationally in the tanks, we were looking at 15% a year. We did 15% 2 years ago. We went to 12% this year, and we have to wait and see how everything filters out. But we're going to look at the rates, and hopefully it will be less than, it won't be a double-digit increase for 2011, assuming some things don't change. But that's really positive, and it's going to make things easier for doing that third tank out at the Eastern Reservoir. These are the things we're doing. You can see the visible things are the tanks. About 90% of our investment. Am I going too long? Okay. I just said, we're doing a lot of different things. I keep going, hitting the wrong button here. These are pump stations and renovations. These are storage tank changes. We've added tanks. We've replaced tanks. We've removed tanks. We put a cover on a tank. The whole philosophy was to save money. We had a tank in Fairmont, 10 million gallons. They saved $180,000 when they built it back in the 70s by not putting a cover on it. And it cost us a lot of money to maintain it, and because it wound up being open to the surface. And so, like, 25 years later, it cost us $2 million to cover it. So you think about the $180,000, maybe it wasn't such a smart move to save that $180,000. We don't look at things that way anymore. We look out 50 years when we do a project. I'm going to try to skip through some of this. I did mention, have in here, excuse me. Lost it here. But these are ongoing projects. One of the things that we're proud of is... these are some of the things that we're doing soon. We've got the second covered tank at stored in at the eastern site. We're rebuilding the southern branch pump stations. We're going to improve the feed to the West Hill supply. And then our roof in our building, it needs to be replaced. We're going to do it with a green roof. We actually have a green team at the authority. One of the best things we did was we embraced recycling. We're one of the top business recyclers in Onondaga County. And then there's a system that's going to be built up in West Monroe that's going on. What I wanted to do is get to here. This is the plant project, things that we're doing there. after September 11th and some things that were happening in Iraq where they were trying to use chlorine as an improvised explosive device, IEDs, they stopped trying to use chlorine. There's been some push at Congress to go to what they call inherently safer technologies or alternate technologies, and they almost think it's like switching from Coke to Pepsi. We actually spent a year doing a pilot study at the plant and looking at it. We actually converted both the water plant and the dam over to hypo. This is just to give you an idea of some of the size of the excavation, what was going on. This is the new filter gallery before we put it in place. And as you can see here on the end, this is the construction we built. There's two new filters in here. We didn't add capacity to the plant, but we spread out the load. Our water plant we joined the Partnership for Safe Water about 12 years ago. When Congress couldn't pass the Safe Drinking Water Act, EPA got a little fed up. They started the voluntary program. We joined it. Our plant was the eighth plant in the country certified under Phase 3. There's about a couple hundred plants now involved in it. We've maintained that certification for about 12 years now. Our plant manager, who's embraced it, became a peer reviewer. Now he's the chair of the peer reviewer committee. That's one of the new filters. You can see how clean the water is. I put this out here, chlorine. There's always some people they have some questions about it, but there's some people that feel that chlorine is probably one of the biggest health, biggest causes of health improvement in the last 100 years. You can see here, these are death rates for typhoid fever before the use of chlorine and how it's dropped off, and by the 50s, it was virtually gone. Jersey City, New Jersey was actually the first place in the United States to use chlorine for disinfection. We're still using chlorine, but we're now using liquid, not gas, so it's safer. 30-million-gallon reservoir. This is what it looks like now. That's what's up there. It's near Green Lakes. And what you have is that's the tank that's over here that's being built, that we're building. This is that reservoir you just saw. When this tank is built down here, we're going to replace it with a 20-million-gallon inside here, so we'll have 50 million gallons of storage at that facility. This is what the footprint of the tank looks like. It's up here. We worked out a deal. We got the contractor to work. There's Sisters of St. Francis. There's a retreat up above here. All the dirt that was excavated here is actually up here on the hill in a berm. They wanted a berm so we didn't have to haul all the dirt away from the site. We tried to do some green things with it. Here's the Western Reservoir. There's two 50-million-gallon reservoirs here with a berm in between. We're building in one of them. Again, you can see we're building in the back here. In this particular case, what we've done, you can see that's macadam. There's the existing reservoir. It's online, and this is what we're building. This is at the point it's at. They actually just started up working again about 2 weeks ago. All the macadam that we took out of here, we recycled it. We used it to build the roadway. I'm almost there. We used it to rebuild the roadways, and we actually found borrow material for the base right on site. We didn't have to haul it in, so we kept trucks off the road. That's our water quality information. You have a lot of things out there. Big hot topic is pharmaceuticals, and I could talk to you about that later. We did some reviews on that. Those are just a bunch of awards we received. And then there's something about our senior staff. So kind of rushed it. There's a lot to talk about, and I like talking about it. So.
What did you do up there? Thank you. All right, I know there are questions. That's why we kind of rushed you. Clyde.
This may be a long one, but I'm wondering about the fact that we're interested in controlling sprawl within Onondaga County. And it would seem to me that over the years, Onondaga Water Authority or whatever has been responsible in part for making it easier to sprawl out into the counties. Now, Onondaga County is now trying to readopt what was originally a 2010 plan, partly to control sprawl. Who's going to make the decisions about expansion, further expansion of our infrastructure and so on? You, with water, or the Onondaga County Legislature?
Well, it's kind of a complicated question answer on my part. Typically, a developer will come in and ask us, do you have water? The answer for us is yes. We have 70 million gallons a day capacity. We're using about 37. The short answer is, do we have water available? Yes, but those developers, anybody, they pay for the water. All the infrastructure, they pay for it up front, and then we'll build it for a developer. We're very willing to work with the county on areas, but we need the towns to decide where they want to have the development go. And I know there's a push towards clusters like with the Dewanee study and whatnot. And then we need coordination between the county and the towns. We're only providing water to developments that the towns approve and that have all the approvals from the DEC and from the the county. So we're not causing it, but we do have the water there, so it makes it easier for it because they're not spending a lot of money to get it there, typically taking it off of a transmission main. But we're very willing to work with the county on this. It ultimately should be the elected officials. I mean, it should be the planning boards of both the county and the town levels. We're not going to go provide water to somebody that they say no to. And we're not interested in doing that. I mean, I live in the county. I'm a customer as well. I don't want to see that happen as well. I've seen the benefits of living in a town where you can walk to someplace. My father lives in a small town that, you know, they have a little town center. It's nice to be able to walk on a sidewalk and go do your shopping and everything without having to get in a car and go someplace. So there's some benefits to that. We want to maintain green spaces. And we're willing to work with the towns and the villages and the county the way they see fit. We certainly wouldn't usurp what they decide.
Are we doing anything differently now security-wise than before 9/11?
We're doing an awful lot differently now. We have a lot of security measures in place, cameras, sensors, alarms. We've always asked our neighbors around our facilities if they see a vehicle that doesn't have an Aqua logo on it to let us know. We actually had that happen because we do some work, like we rent space on our tanks for antennas, and they need to do work sometimes, and the neighbors know about that. And we've actually had an instance in Liverpool where the contractor showed up ahead of time and the police beat our guy there. So people do watch. There's a lot of other things that we're doing too with respect to how hydrants are monitored. What we do is we have a hydrant permit. Anybody that uses an Aqua hydrant is supposed to have a permit. They're supposed to have a meter. They're supposed to have a backflow device. And what we did was we sent a copy of what the permit looks like, and we sent what the setup looks like to the sheriff's department and all the police departments. And what we tell them is that if you don't see those things out there, that they're either stealing the water or they could be trying to put something in. And we actually had somebody that was prosecuted last year for doing just that. I mean, not putting it in, but for using a hydrant illegally. So we're very serious about it, and I've actually talked with some people at the Sheriff's Department the last couple of weeks. They appreciate the input on it, and we have a good relationship with the DA's office because they understand what we're trying to do. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing, and it's a lot different. It's been costly. There's been some capital improvements with it, and there's been some changes. Like just at our water plant, we used to run one shift unmanned every day. We actually run round the clock now, mainly so we have people at the facility.
Can you tell us about how you control the quality of your water and how the quality compares with other regional water suppliers?
Well, the Onondaga County Water Authority, Tisco Lake property facilities, goes through the Marcellus Water Treatment Plant. It's a multimedia filter. We do pretreatment at the lake before it comes to the plant. It is covered in the report there. But we monitor continuously. We're required, just like on bacteriological wise, we're required to take 120 samples a month. But we sample 4 days a week. We don't sample on Friday because you have to read it the next day, and that would involve overtime. But we spread it out over the month, and we actually probably do 2 to 3 times the amount of samples that we're required to do. My feeling is some systems, the small systems are required to take maybe 5 or 6 samples. They'll take it once a month, and they may not take it on the same day. They could have a 60-day spread between their samples. If we're going to have an issue, I want to know about it right away so we can close that window down. And typically, we don't have an issue with our bacteriological samples, but we try to increase our monitoring and everything. We don't just, if it says we got to do it annually, we may do it more often than annually. And there's other things that we test for. When we hear something that's going on, like pharmaceuticals, 2008, there were some articles in the Associated Press about that. We actually went out and tested for pharmaceuticals, both in the Lake Ontario supply and the Tisco supply. And in that go-around, we found, and they're talking nanograms per liter, parts per trillion, of acetaminophen in the Lake Ontario water and caffeine in the Tisco water. But when you look at it on a proportional basis, the amount that we found in nanograms per liter, you're talking about having to drink a million glasses or several million glasses of water to get the equivalent of one cup of coffee, or 7 million glasses of Lake Ontario water to get the equivalent of one 200 milligram acetamin tablet. That's what's happened is the ability to monitor these things is far outstripping what we have. And people say, well, how do you let that get in the water? We don't let that get in the water. It comes from you. You know, I like, well, the example I use is, how did caffeine get in the Tisco Lake? I said, you know, I see guys out ice fishing all day. I don't see anybody leaving. So.
I have a question for you, Mike. Could you explain a little bit about the relationship between Aqua and the Metropolitan Water Board? When we set this up, I had suggested, well, should we have someone from the Metropolitan Water Board here? Because I don't, right, we wouldn't have had time, but I don't, the difference in the function between the two of you and the relationship and, you know, what lies outside that. You're both public authorities answerable to the legislature?
No, we're a public authority. The Metropolitan Water Board is actually a county entity. What happened is, in the 60s, there was a drought, and the Tisco Lake, I've seen pictures of it, it looked like a creek running through it. There was no water behind the dam, and the people that were in charge then, the county, decided we needed more water for the county to develop, and they created the Onondaga County Water District, and then they created the Metropolitan Water Board to oversee it. And the Metropolitan Water Board takes that water out of Lake Ontario, treats it, and then sells it. And their customers initially were the City of Syracuse and Onondaga County Water Authority. The city only buys it on an intermittent basis because they have a very good supply in Skaneateles. They have a filtration avoidance permit, and they have some triggers in it. So if one of those triggers kicks in, they may buy water from the Metropolitan Water Board, but typically they don't need it. So essentially Aqua buys about 99% of the water produced by the Metropolitan Water Board. They're a wholesaler and we're a retailer, so we're a customer of theirs. And then we turn around and sell it.
Why do we need that?
Because in the 60s, we had about 8,000 customers, and you're talking about in the 60s, 1960 dollars, $30+ million of capital improvement. Authority didn't have the wherewithal to do it, and the county did, and they spread it over the entire county taxpayer base. So it was a matter of functionality. I mean, obviously, it's much different today. We do have the financial strength. We have a AA3 bond rating. That's as high as we can get because we don't tax, so we can't get a AAA rating. But we have as high a rating as we can get for an entity that doesn't tax people. Over here.
Yes. I wonder if you'd speak to the problems of diversion. I know it's probably not much of a problem in our area, but I think that what it really means is that water supply taking from one watershed and supplied to another. And we do have a diversion in Onondaga County. It's a serious problem among the Great Lakes because of all the cities. There's a lot of areas of diversion going on. And what kind of controls and what concerns are there in that?
Well, from our perspective, the customers that we serve and the water that we're using all is really the Lake Ontario watershed. So even Atisco is part of that. So everything that we don't sell anything outside. Everything that's coming from Lake Ontario is going back to Lake Ontario. The water that comes from Atisco actually makes its way back to Lake Ontario. So we're not taking anything. We're not selling it outside the thing. What I kind of look at is our four county region is kind of like a bowl, and the customers are like cereal, and the infill is going to be the milk we put in eventually. We're not going outside where we are. We're not going to go sell it outside the district. So we're trying to keep the water within the drainage basin. We're not selling it outside it, so we're not diverting it outside there. The Great Lakes Basin, that could be a big issue, like in the Western Waterworks. You know, the guys out west, they're very serious about whiskeys for drinking and waters for fighting. They've had some really interesting things. There are people talking about trying to take water out of the Great Lakes and take it away from where its natural flow is. The Great Lakes Commission and the seven states plus Canada are involved in that. They want to prevent that from happening. There was even talk a few years ago. A Japanese firm wanted to come into the Great Lakes with these big balloons of water and take the water, haul it by ship to the Middle East, and they fought that and stopped that. So we're trying to keep the water within the system. It comes out and goes back in. That's what we're trying to do. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, thanks.
Mike, I have one more question on sprawl, and that we have fewer people in Onondaga County and fewer jobs than we did when we brought Ontario Water. So the only way that you can have continue to gain customers is to go further and further from the center, including out into West Monroe. With lower density development, all of our costs from transportation to every single public service increases. So while our water costs get more and more efficient, it may be making ultimately this community less and less sustainable. We're one of the few places in the country who has had significant sprawl without actual growth. has the Water Authority ever discussed this as a policy issue from your perspective and how you relate to the broader community?
Actually, what we did was I actually talked to the county executive about being involved with the next, the advent of the 2010 plan and how we can work with that. We've taken on a lot of customers, but you talk about the urban sprawl. We're serving houses that were already existing. These aren't new houses. These are people that have wells that have gone bad, or their water quality wasn't that good. Like you talk about the West Monroe, the Constantia job. Those are existing homes that we're serving up there that they just don't have very good water quality, or they have no water at all. And 2/3 of our growth has been through acquisition of existing customers. That sprawl had already taken place. It's not like we're pushing it. Where we've had our growth in new customers has been actually the town of Onondaga, Cicero, and Clay. That's where we've added our new customers, where there was new construction.
Van Buren. Well, because I know the zoning immediately changed. You put 10 miles of water line in to get to 250 customers, that means lots of potential for growth along the way.
I'll take you to the Oswego thing where Metropolitan Water Board paid for all that up there. We did that in the mid-1990s, and there's water in every street up there. And I don't think there's 100 more customers up there than when we started. So, it hasn't been a big growth up in that area.
Fewer and fewer people in all of the central New York counties, and we do get continual decreased density in the city of Syracuse and in Onondaga County, and it's really ultimately hurtful to all resources.
So it's a significant sustainability issue.
Are the we were talking before about funding, and the developers or the towns fund the construction. As far as the maintenance, is that also funded by the users of the system?
It's all user fees. One of the things that we've done for every job that we take any acquisition, they have to be able to contribute to the bottom line to support their maintenance for their operating system. What we do is we look at what it costs to operate the system and make sure that we fund that money, plus they're contributing to the bottom line, so we have money for capital improvements and whatnot going through forward with it. So if it's a loser, we won't do it. So.
We have time for one more question, I think, on the other side of the room.
I recall hearing there's a difference in cost between the water coming out of Skaneateles or coming out of Lake Ontario. Could you tell us what that difference is and what's the source, what creates that difference?
Well, first, the water coming out of Skaneateles is the City of Syracuse Water Department, and they set their rates. And then the Metropolitan Water Board is... Their rates are set by the recommendation by the Metro Board, and then the county legislature approves those rates. Differences is Skaneateles water supply. It's an unfiltered supply. They do add chlorine, and for disinfection, I think they do fluoride. I'm not really sure, but they have a watershed program. They maintain it to keep the water pristine, so it's good quality. But they don't have a water treatment plant like the Metropolitan Water Board. The Metropolitan Water Board has a 50 million gallon a day treatment plant with all the facilities that go with it, multimedia filters and whatnot. So there's bigger facilities there, so there's a cost there. Plus, one of the biggest differences is Skaneateles and Atisco both are gravity-fed to the system, and the Metropolitan Water Board has to pump it from Lake Ontario up into Onondaga County, and that's probably 25% of their budget. So there's a big difference in energy costs. That's why when we try to maximize our Atisco Lake water and use and supplement it with the Ontario water.
Okay. Well, I know that you left copies of your annual report as well as the reprints of the article Challenge of Growth, also the bookmarks that would help people determine how much water they might be losing through their leaky faucets. So, thank you, Michael Hooker, and
you're welcome.